and the Amazon. You've drunk with indigenous curanderos. We'll talk about Ron Wheelock and Western curanderos and medicine people from whatever nation state, but, you know, practicing in the work of spirit work and vibrational medicine and plant medicine. Yeah. And you're participating, you're continuing that tradition in your own work.
Yeah.
But then also, you're this Western-trained scientist doing, you know, neuroscience and EEG readings. Yeah. And
Yes.
How does that marry?
Yeah, I love it because I'm informed about how these medicines are working in the brain. I mean, and especially now, the science of psychedelics has really reached a mature place.
Where's that? Give us the context. And
I'll briefly summarize. Sure.
It's okay. It's all fine. It's all good. Give him a kiss. Come on. I want to hear the lips smack. Viewers, there we go.
She can't get away from the kitchen. And she loves to bang.
Yeah.
No, I'm fine. I'm making
It's the sounds of future feasts.
Before, so.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm fine.
Yeah, at MAPS 2013, there were some wonderful presentations, and the most impressive are from the laboratory of David Nutt, Imperial College.
In England.
In London. And Carhart Harris, who is a young psychiatrist working with David Nutt's group.
Mm-hmm.
And he presented on the psilocybin and a little bit on ketamine, too. And then MDMA story. And then the group, of course, of Franz Bollenweider, who has a team of, I don't know, over 20 professionals, Zurich Psychiatric Hospital. He's somebody to definitely look up, Franz Bollenweider. Mm-hmm. And I'll show you pictures of us together.
What's his story?
Well, his whole approach is, you know, the brain science of psychedelics. His quest is to understand how psychedelics act on the brain.
So what I need to understand, where is the technology and what are they using map and to resonate to the MRI?
Yeah. So Wollenweider's group has employed all of the tools of modern brain science.
But what are those tools?
PET scanners, SPECT scanners, positron emission tomography, brain imaging technology.
Brain imaging technology.
Yeah.
Because all I know is like fMRIs, basically MRI or fMRI and EEG, but they're different things, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. And then EEG and then magnetoencephalography, MEG.
So what I'd like to know is this these different technologies, can we build up an aggregate of what's happening in the brain? Because the EEG only tells you which region of the brain, isn't it?
Yeah. Well,
and MRI tells you a different thing about the brain. Like, are we getting a more collective understanding through the unification of these
exactly.
technologies?
Exactly. Marrying all of these tools is the way to go. The EEG gives you very high temporal resolution.
What does that mean,
temporal resolution? Time. It can resolve signals.
So you're seeing the peaks and troughs.
At the millisecond time scale.
So you can see what's firing.
The brain is an electrochemical organ, you see.
Well, now we're onto it. The brain, yes. The brain is an electrochemical organ.
It's an electrochemical organ. And so neurons communicate via electrical signals and chemical signals. And the electrical system depends on the chemical system, and vice versa. The chemical system is dependent.
Depends in what way?
Well, because the electrical activity is what releases the chemicals.
Ah.
And then the chemicals trigger the electrical activity.
Oh, that's a very neat little feedback loop.
Yeah. So they're completely interdependent.
So when you add a psychedelic chemical to that mix.
You change
the potential for electrical activity.
Well, you change exactly. You modify the existing view, and supported by a lot of evidence, is that the 5-HT2A
receptor
subtype serotonin receptor is the key player in the actions of LSD, psilocybin, now also DMT, although there are other receptor types which participate.
When you say key player, that receptor site is filled by these chemicals.
Yeah, these chemicals act as agonists, you see. So they bind to this receptor system,
mm-hmm.
and this receptor system is very widely distributed in the cortex,
mm-hmm.
particularly in the layer 5 pyramidal cells. The cortex has 6 distinct layers, and the layer 5 is very important. It mostly contributes to the EEG signals. The source of the electrical voltage fluctuations, which can be recorded at the scalp when you place an electrode at the scalp.
Mm-hmm.
So the present state of the brain science of psychedelics has gotten to be quite exciting, because they've now reported in several labs, so there's been replication of the findings, that important neural networks in the brain are the target of these psychedelics, in particular the studies with psilocybin. And one of them is called the default mode network, DMN.
Mm,
So the DMN is a very important system of neural networks. It's like a big highway system. It's like, imagine the freeway system of the whole Bay Area.
Mm.
That's a pretty good analogy. And then there are hubs. And the hubs would be the cities, mm-hmm, San Francisco, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, Oakland, San Jose.
The highways which connect them is the default mode network.
And the network is the highways, the pathways that connect these hubs.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the information between the frontal cortex, okay, and then the sensory, motor, and visual areas of the brain is mediated through this network system.
Right.
And so they now have experimentally observed that the default mode network activity measured with fMRI, which is called the BOLD signal, brain oxygen level dependent signal, which is a measure of how oxygen is utilized by neurons that are active. A neuron needs 2 things to operate. It needs a source of energy,
mm-hmm,
which it gets from glucose metabolism primarily, and oxygen, respiration. And so when a neuron is not getting enough oxygen or glucose, its function is compromised or it'll die, This is why strokes are so damaging. It, after 3-4 minutes, when the blood supply to a region of the brain is interrupted, that area will die or will become severely damaged.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the other is PET scans and SPECT, single positron emission computerized tomography. It's another nuclear medicine tool to measure glucose utilization. So when you see higher levels of glucose utilization, that indicates a region of neurons that are more active.
Mm.
So the PET, feasting on the glucose, and fMRI give you the very precise localization, the 3D positioning of the structures that are more active.
Where the energy is moving in the brain.
Well, they show what neurons are showing activity.
Yeah.
And what networks. And they can get it down now to a resolution of about a millimeter.
Mm.
A millimeter cube.
Mm.
Because you have to think of this as a three-dimensional.
Yeah.
So that's how you can pinpoint. You can say this particular structure of the brain is showing more activity. Okay, this nucleus, this section of the amygdala, this little section of this particular hub, this network.
That's great to know, but it's like saying I don't know.
Well, it's
the
start.
It's the cover to the book, right?
Yeah,
but it's the
start.
Journey the book is about.
Yeah, it's a start.
Can't
now,
be mapped.
So we're now learning where these molecules, these psychoactive molecules, act. So that's the first question, is where do they go? What do they attach to? And then what is the sequelae, the steps that follow? So we know that these tryptamines and the families are, you know, LSD, psilocybin, DMT, mescaline to a certain extent too. They all attach, they're called agonists, and they have a certain affinity, a selectivity for this 5-HT2A receptor, meaning that they can selectively bind to this receptor at a very low concentration or a higher concentration. So there's a graph which I just found, and I actually took a print shot, a screen, and you know I have a series of, images that I wanted to bring to the talk tomorrow, because or just to have
yeah, handy, yeah, great, let's do that
in case
yeah.
we go there, and I can then illustrate this by showing this data. And so mescaline would be at the bottom, and LSD would be at the top of this graph that shows binding to the 5-HT2A receptor and potency, psychedelic potency. So they now have these data sets.
So
now the EEG captures the live, real-time electrical communication function of the brain. So, and the brain is producing these oscillations that range in frequencies from, you know, 0.001 hertz, almost DC potentials, all the way up to above 100 hertz or even higher. They've measured EEG up, upwards of 200 hertz. You know, that's cycles per second.
What's happening in the brain that's at 200 hertz?
So, well, and there's a pretty good understanding of the biophysical mechanisms that generate this electrical signals and how they propagate. And that's sort of my field. And that's what gets me up in the morning and excited about doing this. So by marrying and combining the electrical magnetic MEG, magnetoencephalography, with the PET scan, SPECT, and fMRI, we're getting now a picture of the whole dynamic function of the brain, the electrical and the anatomical, the neuroanatomical.
But you know what I would like to know as a layperson is what can we glean from what we know about how these are attacking the receptor sites or agonists to the receptor sites? Why does nature do that? Like, why does nature have these chemical structures in the environment outside of human consciousness, but in Gaian consciousness, that fit these very incredibly intricate bits of our brain? It's like we are not disconnected at all. It's like nature's going, here's the glue, boom, 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 boom.
That is, I think, the most exciting question, is why do we share? Now, these receptors, incidentally, are present in brains of even lower mammals and some invertebrates. All right, so they've been around for several hundred million years.
Well, you know, I've talked about this, and I, you know, I mythologize things, and I, my science is sloppy. I admit, you know, but my,
well,
my understanding,
the whole cannabis story is fascinating. The, well, the anandamide receptors and the CB1.
Well, before we get to that, but my understanding is nature's the dimethyltryptamine is being reclassified in the last year or so or two as a neurotransmitter.
Yeah,
I saw a scientific paper. This is what they're saying. It basically fits the parameters of a neurotransmitter, right? But it's threaded throughout the plant kingdom. It's in the animal kingdom. It's in the humans. It's like it's very intimate in the creatures which are sentient or sapient to some level. And even in the insects, is it in the insects?
I have not seen insects mentioned in the list. I know that it's present in the animal kingdom and in the plant kingdom, and it's very widespread. Now, there are very stringent requirements to classify a molecule as a neurotransmitter. you have to demonstrate that there's the enzymatic machinery to synthesize it. Then it has to be mobilized and stored in a way that it can be released as a neurotransmitter, typically loaded into vesicles, synaptic vesicles. And then you have to demonstrate that the synaptic vesicles actually get released at the synaptic sites. So there's a whole series of steps. And then there has to be a mechanism to inactivate it. And there has to be a receptor to bind. So we have that part. And they also know a great deal about the pharmacology of DMT, how it's synthesized, the biosynthetic pathways.
It seems that nature's given it this. It's given it this. It's a revered position, you know, DMT in the nature's kingdom, you know, and it's involved intimately in consciousness itself.
Yeah. That's, I think, the ultimate goal of all of this work is, and those are the hard questions, you know, like, why are these chemicals?
They're not random. They're not there. They're not secreted by the plants. They're not there as a repellent to other creatures to stop them eating plants. It's not as simple as that. That's basically been disproved. That's a default explanation which may have been involved in some type of natural selection mechanisms, but isn't the primary driver of why nature would go to these incredible energy, you know, intensive endeavors with the plants to make DMT in them.
You believe the concept, and of course you postulate that the plant and animal kingdoms have developed this intimate relationship that enables us to explore our consciousness through the plant chemicals, and part of integrating with the whole Gaia.
Basically, but yeah, I think you have to expand the plants, the animals, and even, I would say, the insect. My theory is, right, if you had intelligence which is independent of matter, let's say, and it is holographic intelligence, it's non-local, it's everywhere, right? Consciousness is everywhere, right? Non-locally. And if you had to then integrate that in a biosphere on a material, biological level, grounded into matter, you would need to thread all throughout the sentient, sapient creatures some unifying chemical, you know, stratum, which would basically ground consciousness on the biological level. And what do we see?
Like DNA, like thinking of it as a DNA type of...
Like a frequency, of consciousness. Yeah, DNA of consciousness.
A DNA of consciousness.
This is a nice one. This is a nice turn in the dinner party. Uh-huh. How's that chicken going?
Yes. Everything is done.
Can if it's in focus? Because sometimes go in the back and take a peek.
No, I reckon we could just do this. Is yes, dinner with Dr. Wong. We could eat and just continue the conversation. Yeah, it's a dinner party conversation.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, this is such
for me, it's a great pleasure to have you as a guest, as a dinner guest. And
I think this could be a public podcast. The world's listening.
The adventures that we've shared and the whole Rosacita, we could talk about that a whole lot. I wasn't aware that you had a cameraman there, or at least I wasn't.
What do you mean? You didn't see the cameraman there?
I wasn't really paying a whole lot of attention to that.
Wait, I've got photos from you. You were taking photos.
Yeah, like, I was taking photos, and I still have them. I have some wonderful pictures. And then when I started getting the email threads from you saying I'm working this up into a video and a book, and I might mention you, and would you be okay with you know, agreeing to use your name, and how would you like to be cited and all this. I thought, wow, this is kind of a long shot, you know. And now it's wonderful to see how it has come to fruition. And look, he's given me
a DVD,
which has all of the
special features. The special features.
So this is not
it's not available online.
This is not the one that you get on Amazon or eBay.
Oh, that, right? You get that DVD on Amazon.
It's, but it's a high-priced...
The Higher Awakenings DVD, which, for listeners, you know, anchors this experiment at La Rosa Cita, which was the 5-MeO-DMT brainwave experiment, which we filmed, and we have anchored with the visuals and the emotional narration.
Yeah.
And so the DVD does have the special MAPS interview we did in April 2013
in last year,
a special feature, which explains the brainwave activity and explains the readings and gives some scientific context.
Yeah, and I'd be very happy.
Because people ask, like, what happened with that experiment, Rack? It was so full on.
To share more of that with you and to show you the other results that I have, because I have a pretty sizable body of data which is beginning to show patterns, you see. So it looks to be quite consistent.
And when you say you've been studying people...
Mostly with the Mimosa NN-DMT.
Yeah, but you've also done Salvia, and you've done monks who have been meditating.
Yes.
So let's tell us a bit about the broad spectrum while we get ready.
Yeah. And there's common findings with the Salvia and the NN-DMT. And... I guess that ended
there. Huh? We're going to continue the dinner party here. Oh, wait, you just keep talking. So we did this ambiently. This is an experiential podcast. So what are the overarching sort of similarities you've had with people with 5-MeO that you've done the EEG brainwave recordings with?
Yeah. This is... Now, it's very important to do this kind of work, I think it's very important that as a researcher, as a investigator, explorer, that one have the experience
themselves.
Oneself. Because otherwise you're always detached and it's always kind of an abstract thing.
How could you possibly
not have it,
integrate any contextualization of these experiences unless you have done them yourself? With the scientific training to anchor and understand where it could be going.
I mean,
hello, the scientific inquiry, you know, let's look at, I mean, the pioneers of science, you know, they really, you know, it's a personal journey. You know.
Totally. And many scientific discoveries have occurred because of the scientists experimenting on themselves.
Exactly.
Or a close family member, you know?
Yeah. So you've done this with close family members?
Well, I've done it with my partner. And she has wonderful insights that she shares. And sometimes gets me back on track.
Well, actually, that's a very good point because, you know, the dry, rationalist, sort of reductionist, scientific breakdown of data is data. But the value in the human experience of the data, it's great to have that, you know, that more emotional sort of quality.
The poetic, by the way, which I have to tell you, that's what you have captured. So... elegantly and eloquently in this film. That's what makes Aya Awakening stand out.
Thank you. Yeah.
From all the other ayahuasca films.
You know what's funny though?
When I first saw it, I was, you know, I was getting goosebumps. I was just like right there with you and going, yes, this is very much experience, and he's captured it beautifully, and then the visuals and the music, which I'm very tuned to, I love music, and it makes all the difference.
Lulu Medill is the maestro, the genius who did the sound design and incorporated the jungle sounds and the ambient sounds and her own music and medicine music, you know, because you know what, again, I saw this article, actually it was a Facebook feed, I must admit this article, but it was talking about some of the intuition, it was mirroring these exact intuitions I had on 5-MeO, was that I understood intuitively that I was seeing sounds. And I don't mean just random sound, I mean conscious, intelligent vibration emanated from, you know, the source.
Someone else just said that.
It's in the Facebook feed, I saw it yesterday, and I was like, wow, how about that? Someone else is getting it too.
Sasha's... that's what she's seeing. Seeing music.
We met this guy and his ex-wife. She's a Tibetan woman.
Yeah.
And she described in the most extraordinary detail and precision how on an LSD trip she could see music as what geometries was it?
I'm not sure, but she could see the music,
which is synesthesia, but at a pretty refined level, and it was beautiful.
I was thinking about the deconstruction of the data sets, but the information that comes through, the fact that what it's you were talking before, and we didn't finish this thread, this understanding that we now know that these psychedelics attach to the antagonists to the default mode network, right? But it switches it off, doesn't it?
It switches it off. Yeah.
So what does that mean to consciousness?
The video to watch is online. And I'll take you to the link. You can access it through the MAPS website, actually. It's a talk that was presented at MAPS 2013 by Carhart Harris, this young psychiatrist, and it's about a 55-minute long video, but it's brilliant, because as a psychiatrist, his whole quest is to understand the mind. And so he tells you that when you go from the brain has many, many networks. There's a salience network, which is the network that allows you to pay attention to what's important, what's salient about the environment. All right? So we know where
to judge and to then preference.
Well, yeah, to select what are you going to respond to.
Yeah. Which can be hard sometimes when you're juggling the baby,
yeah,
the second baby,
the
baby, and the dog,
yeah,
and the wife.
Yeah, all that. And so there's attention networks, there's pain networks, there's memory networks. They're like all entangled, and they co-activate.
Mesh network.
Yeah, it's a whole mesh.
Yeah.
Okay, 3D. Imagine it as a forest. Here.
You guys are going to dig into this thing, but dinner is
Oh, look at that beautiful chicken. Thank
here.
You. Yeah.
Here.
And
this National Geographic, this is the brain. These are the tracks, the fiber tracks.
I got this once. I'm going to get this. That's great.
What I like about this... So, the brain's pathways can now be selectively revealed. It's called the
Queen's Attention. They use the different pathways,
Yeah. And then this is the fine detail, and they're all grids.
Wow.
It's a grid structure.
Wow.
But this is what I like. The glow of memory. When you form a memory, there's a physical change in the brain.
The glow of memory.
Yeah, the glow of memory.
Just the glow
so
state.
It's all dynamic.
A memory stored?
Yeah, a memory stored. When it goes, it
and you know how memories fade? Does that mean the glow is fading?
It has to synthesize new proteins. And then those are stored.
When you're saying glow, you mean electrical sensitivity?
Well, these are dyes which are photosensitive.
Mm-hmm.
And so they glow when the dye... when a voltage change occurs in the cell, the dyes detect these voltage changes and they light up.
Wow.
It's an amazing tool.
The glow of memory.
So you can see what the neurons are doing in the brain, no? But this is what I like. I like... Here's an epileptic where... these pictures here are very important. Okay. So, this is a mouse brain at many, many scales.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a slice. It takes you from this slice, and then it takes this little square of it, and it blows it up to this scale.
Wow.
And then it takes this little square, and it blows it up to this scale. And then it takes this little square
so
and blows it up.
They're all. How far does it go? Are they getting to like the almost the atomic level? Are they getting beyond biology?
No. These are the synaptic vesicles.
Oh yeah.
So it just shows you the fine structure now of the neurons.
So and this is the February 2014 National Geographic issue on the brain, the latest research. How synchronistic is that?
It's a beautiful one, huh? I saw it at the checkout counter and I said, oh, we got to look
at this. I'm going to get that too, yeah.
So what I'd like to just impress on you is that this is a forest. This is like the Amazon rainforest.
It's an ecosystem of consciousness.
Total ecosystem there. And so the best analogy to visualize what neurons may look like is simply to go outside and to look at trees and bushes. And particularly now in the winter when they're...
You can see the structure of the branches.
When there are no leaves, it's all the branching structure.
It's synaptical. Yeah.
And so they grow tightly together. And so that's exactly how neurons and glial cells and the micro capillaries, everything is all entangled. So you see, not quantum entanglement, not at that level. But what I'm trying to get you to physically visualize the environment inside the brain. It's exactly like the environment in the forest.
Which begs the next question. Are we inside a giant hologrammatic brain structure called Earth?
There you go.
That's a pretty wild question.
And if so, what is the value of having these rogue agents called humans, which are actually starting to actually retrofit it? We're like a virus. We're like a retrovirus genetically engineering the entity from within.
Stop.
Oh my god!
That sounds like a wild ayahuasca trip.
Oh,
well,
I thought of that before too. It's like
I just conjugate.
Oh
you know,
my god!
What this man?
What's reality?
Is that he has the language.
Yeah, I grok it. I grok it.
He
I get it.
Makes up the language.
I know. I like that.
To,
he makes it as he goes on
to take you to these scenarios, which I think is the most beautiful thing, because our life is language. You see, it's how we make pictures of actions.
Mm.
No.
Well, you know, I would love to continue discussing while we eat dinner with our guests here on the dinner with Dr. Wan and Cheryl. What does language do to the human brain? Well, now that we're talking about that, it's got to activate and trickle through. But what centers of the brain get triggered by language? Because what I'm doing with metaphor, all I'm trying to do is evoke an individual response, which there's something in a transmission of intent or semantic meaning, which leaps across the void of separation from one brain to the other.
Listen to this.
You know what I mean?
Oh, well, that's like... That's
it's all metaphor. It's all metaphor.
It's all metaphor. Yes.
It's all metaphor. But what I want you to try and to help me understand, how does the brain structure cope with metaphor and what is it doing?
Well, there's the metaphor center of the brain.
Oh,
did
my
you know about this?
God, this is the best dinner conversation I've ever had.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And it's been very well... characterized, and there's a neuroscientist down in San Diego named Ramachandran who studies this metaphor center of the brain. And what he has learned from studying neurologic patients is that when that area gets damaged, it's impaired, these individuals cannot understand metaphors anymore, and they can't understand puns and jokes.
Oh my god.
That's Asperger's too.
And also, it's common with Asperger's and autism, right? Which is a more severe.
And Republicans.
And Republicans. Yeah.
Sorry, I hope I'm not offending anyone.
And these are the purple.
It was a joke.
These are the purple.
That's a gritty.
Thank you.
Potatoes that he likes. You know?
That's sweet potatoes.
No, these are the purple ones.
That's purple potatoes.
Yeah.
And the other ones are red potatoes.
Nice. Beautiful, thank you. So you're saying there's not just a language in the brain, but there's a metaphor in the brain.
Oh, absolutely, no.
Oh, my God.
There is. I mean, it's well known. And, for example, her son, he's sort of a mild Asperger's. He definitely has some...
Brussels sprouts.
What is Asperger's?
Some unusual features. Well...
Consciousness... Obsesses or sort of?
Yeah, he's obsessive. He spends hours. I mean, he's completely addicted to video games. And
Well, he experiences, along with the other 3 billion people.
Along with the other 3 million kids. But he experiences withdrawal symptoms when he's not playing. And he throws colossal tantrums.
If I can't have my Facebook feed, you know, at least once every four minutes, I start to feel something missing from me.
Oh my god!
I'm becoming we're being shaped in. We're being shaped by the data we take in, and it changes the brain. Yes. Brain structure changes according to what we're doing.
Course,
yeah,
of course,
imprints.
Of course,
tell us about that.
Of course,
yeah.
Anyway, her son doesn't get metaphors and jokes, and he'll get quite upset if you say, you know, like it's raining cats and dogs or something. He looks at you like, what do you say? I mean, that's an extreme example, but subtle things, right? He does not like.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I kid...
resistance.
Kid with him, I have to be very careful because I can quickly make him very uncomfortable and then he snaps.
Are there benefits to a speech? Like in what it's... In the focus of consciousness... that perhaps doesn't have the breadth of the normal human, you know, breadth, but in that focusing, is there some advantage, perhaps?
To have...
Well, there, you know, there's a lot of people in Silicon Valley like people who are autistic because they can hyper-focus on something.
That's what I mean, yeah.
They don't like the social aspect, especially the Asperger's part of it. So they don't get caught up in
the
drama.
Geek community.
They don't get it. They don't get the drama.
So there's a geek default mechanism of the brain.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Mm. And so there's a cultural natural selection happening here through the corporations selecting these people
they
to be, you know, receivers of what they want them to do in their data sort of centers. Mm-hmm. And it's actually promoting and rewarding financially It's shaping natural selection through corporatocracy.
Yeah.
Wow. So the geeks shall inherit the earth. It wasn't just a mistranslation of the Bible.
Well, the book, what is it? The Indigo Child.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what that's kind of about, too. It's
so many amazing topics here for books, right?
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
Mm. This is a really good dinner.
Well, you know, you're on
love.
The road all the time. I can
feel my default mode network changing.
Isn't it sweet to have home cooking?
It's so good. So good.
This is the best.
This has garlic in it. It's got hemp oil, too.
Mm, no wonder it's good.
Mm. Yeah.
Wow. So wait, do we answer the question, what's happening when the psychedelics fill these receptor site things and the default mode network switches off?
Oh, yeah. Then... the brain goes into the mythological consciousness.
That's where I live.
That's where you live? Oh, my God.
That's why I can intuit.
That's amazing. Well, that's what's discussed in that video, and it's brilliant. And he says, because the ego, you know, editor is suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you go into the mythical brain.
I miss this. Why is he in...
When the default mode network
switches
off.
Yeah. During an ayahuasca ceremony or just normal?
With psychedelics and with meditation.
Mm.
Mm.
Well, the ego goes down. There's no ego.
And the mythic comes up.
And then the mythic brain comes up.
Well, that's the whole helmet thing.
Yeah.
The passenger helmet thing.
And so you get out of the language dominant executive, you know,
well,
editor,
just like when
editor.
You're sitting there in the ayahuasca, it's like, why do we need language? That was my...
Yeah.
It's like, you don't need to. It's like,
I use a word, I say you go translinguistic.
Yeah, I like translinguistic
like that,
too,
no?
Yeah.
And I first started using that with
I get that off you? I thought McKenna said that one.
With psilocybin, I've had those experiences, and I've been with some friends where you can communicate telepathically, essentially, right? You start a sentence and somebody else finishes the sentence.
Mm-hmm. Well, we used to do that when we were kids, though.
Mm-hmm.
Do you use
girls?
When we were kids?
I skip it, yes. Yeah. And you can do it with our girlfriends.
Wow. So there's a gestalt hive mind sort of overlap potentially within consciousness where some members of the species, when they resonate at a certain frequency together,
can go
there. The electrical conductivity between the brains jumps the thoughts. It creates a circuit.
I bet you it's better in girls than it is in guys.
I bet you it is too. Well, why? Because the ego, well, maybe not. We're generalizing here. Do you think it's a biochemical? Is it a XY sort of hormonal or maybe a...
Because ego is... could it be on the same wavelength? I mean, as far as the Schumann resonance and stuff like that, if you're right there, you know, really good, like Andy with her little Kiki.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, and she's sitting there.
We had her daughter here last night. We finally got her to agree to have a brain map done.
Cause she was arguing with us. She wanted $50 instead of 30 finger.
Right. The money piece was essential, but we got her.
Then...
Oops. Cheryl has the great idea right at the end of, she's totally enamored with a little hamster that she keeps down in the cage there. I mean, it's her life, you know. And she connects very strongly with animals.
And she connected with our chickens too.
And the chickens too. And I see her, that's where she gets her healing, is she tunes in to the healing potential of the animal communication.
I told her, I said, you know, send Kiki love.
It's total love.
It's a shared empathy she can share with that creature, which isn't the egoic.
Yes.
It's more the mythic,
primal.
It's primal. It's
the primal,
some very
animalistic primal being, of being embodied.
It's, it's a bond thing, like the mom and her kids.
It's the oxytocin vibration.
Ah, the oxytocin vibration.
Yep.
Is that part of the
dimension? Well, that would be the 7.8 hertz, wouldn't it?
I was just reading something about the oxytocin and the amygdala and the whole anxiety and the bonding. And there's some very interesting studies by this group in Berlin. This oxytocin psychiatry.
Well, isn't that that's like the love chemical, oxytocin?
Yeah, bonding.
The bonding thing?
Yeah, so cool.
And that goes up after the ayahuasca ceremony.
Does it?
Uh-huh.
Oh,
awesome. I heard that it was...
you always feel love.
I heard that the Harmaline is sort of heart opening as well on a neurochemical level.
Well,
and then what's the name?
When
the
MAO, MAO acts, it's going to raise serotonin, norepinephrine, dopamine, epinephrine, because the enzymatic degradation of these neurotransmitters is now impaired. The monoamine oxidase inhibits.
Mm.
And you need the MAOs to initiate the breakdown of these chemicals. So that's why they work, the MAOs, MAO inhibitors, work as antidepressants. Because they also elevate the levels of serotonin.
But you're pumping out a lot of cortisol.
I was saying earlier that I have this adrenal cortisol reaction that counteracts the MAOs. On some level.
Have you done, you know, kind of kept it at scale with like nutrition and stuff like that too?
No. See, this is what this is my next step.
He wants to do the dieta,
Not just do it, but approach it more as a science and a rigorous science, not just metaphorical, artistic sort of intuitive, but to to be able to go deeper with the metaphor and with the journalistic exploration.
Yeah,
to treat it as a science. So I was so happy to be having this conversation, this dinner with Dr. Wan and Michelle
tonight. The rigor of science is beautiful, though.
Yeah, but on the the whole health thing is because we live here in Santa Cruz, and Santa Cruz is where the organic movement started in 1971 here.
This is kind of ground zero for
food, definitely.
Yeah.
The food movement and everything else, and everybody, you know, everybody kind of walks. The same thing here. It's all about the food and what you eat.
Yeah.
And
food is medicine.
Food is medicine. And so I've been seeing Craig Lane, and he's, you know, we talk about, you know, the wheat here in the United States is just, hybridized.
Many nutritionists in this town.
There is. Nutritionists and body workers and naturopathic doctors and... Because we have five branches.
Yeah, integrated.
Acupuncture.
Integrated medicine.
Twin Lakes that does... Reiki and body massage. We've got the Elizabeth Van Buren that has the
essential oils.
The College of Botanical Healing Arts.
Well, what's the with things like food being, you know, sources of energy, and you're saying that we need the glucose and we need the energy as well as the electrical things.
Right, but so, but the thing is, these things have been, you know, contaminated and messed with. You know, if you eat processed foods, forget it. You really mess with your body, and it's
That's the thing.
And the integrity of your electromagnetic structure.
Yeah, I mean, you have to eat clean foods.
Well,
yeah.
there's all these foreign.
That's kind of like the basic. Just eat clean foods.
There's all these foreign
no GMOs,
now.
No, you know, everything organic. You know, cows fed on grass and grass fed and everything like that.
Well, tell me why
we didn't evolve a digestive system to be able to deal with all these new foreign molecules that are coming.
Yeah, they're not being digested in
cheesy bacon balls. You know, they put bacon in everything in America. Have you seen? There's like, I've just been here like 4 weeks. There's like, there's liquid cheese with bacon. There's
your mind has got to be pancakes. Going a little foggy these days if you're eating that kind of stuff.
It's weird. It's weird. Well, it's sort of like a drug because there's
it
pleasure,
is
there's pleasure in food as well.
There's a lot of salt in it and stuff like that.
But it's not necessarily good for you.
Oh, of course not. It's not good for you. Some kind of a stimulant. It acts on your body like a stimulant of some sort or an addiction type of chemicals.
There's a book that I give to everybody. It's written by a neurophysiologist, so you have to be able to dive into it. It's called The Compass of Pleasure. And all of the behaviors that lead to addictions are sharing a common neural network, pathways. So whether you're addicted to Facebook, gambling, sex, Coca-Cola, smoking,
cheese bacon balls,
cocaine, methamphetamine, cheese bacon balls,
the pathways of addiction
or whatever it is, they all converge on this little structure. It's called the nucleus accumbens in the brain, and it gets a spurt of dopamine. And when that happens, that's that feeling.
Feels good.
Of pleasure.
Oh, those video games, the shoot 'em up, bang 'em up.
Okay. So this is what we've learned from the neuroscience of addiction. Which is quite amazing, right?
It's fascinating. So wait a second, give me some context here. Who's in charge of the data? What are they doing with it? I want to say science, you know, it sounds all reputable
it's
or whatever.
It comes out of the laboratories and
initially. But what you're saying here is science has found the exact portals, gateways, you know, where these very intimate and very powerful human
behavior
drives happen. So potentially, if advertisers get their hands on this, we're doomed.
Well, that's what they are getting their hands on this stuff.
So that's what's going on right now.
He's talking about
apples.
Food.
Oh,
baked apples.
When was the last time you had a baked apple?
Never.
That's exactly where it's going.
I got dopamine rush just then.
Now there's neuroeconomics.
No.
Yes. And there's neuromarketing. Yes. And there's going to be, you know, neuroadvertising. And yes. Yes, it's already
it's
there.
Brave. It's worse than Brave New World. It's more intricate than Brave New World, isn't it?
Like,
that's a worry. So what about your other colleagues in this profession of neuroscience?
But you know,
what do they think of all this?
We're already, all of us, experimental guinea pigs and victims of all this. I mean, through advertising.
Except for the Asperger's. They don't get it.
Really? They don't get advertising?
Yeah.
No, well,
there's an evolutionary advantage. They might survive.
Just like the cockroaches.
Just like the cockroaches.
Yeah.
That would be a funny
thing. So, I mean, subliminal messages in advertising are huge.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So,
it's gotten to the point.
That's dessert. That's hot.
Yeah.
This isn't even new information. They were already doing this. Way back in the
50s, yeah.
In the 50s, because they would, over the music, over when you're shopping, they would put subliminal messages.
Freud's nephew.
You took the word out of it. Exactly. They would get you to
buy
shop.
Buy things that you didn't want.
Or to buy things
that's
you
why
want.
When malls are set up the way they're set up.
The music.
Because you get caught in there and it's
an altered space.
Totally,
yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
And then one time I got out of there and I couldn't sleep for 2 days after being in Westgate Mall.
Really?
I was just, oh, God. It totally distraught me. I don't go into those places where you can't even see a window within about 10 steps. It was bad.
So talking about moles, which are almost like the cancerous antithesis of, you know, the natural world.
I like the way you put that.
And you mentioned twice now, and I wanted to pick up this thing because we did mention it earlier, this idea of the Schumann resonance. And we're talking before about the Earth being, you know, this ecology of consciousness, right? And so what is, if we can do this and we can figure out the schematic of what's happening in the microcosm of the brain, can we apply it to the macrocosm of the planet?
Well, it's the other way around.
Is it?
It's the planet, and we need to get back in tune with the planet rather than the other way around.
Which is why she's secreting psychedelics and entheogens. You know, that's what I believe.
And also, the people like in Alaska where they started this whole thing with earthing. It's called earthing. Because there's so much snow there, they're not connected to the earth.
Oh.
And so they connect, they put, you plug in this blanket right into the...
Blankets, into the earth,
it's grounding.
You drive a copper rod into the ground.
Yeah, well, all the houses have the copper rods into the ground. Yeah, and when you do the electrical, this is what happens.
That's what that grounds the house's electrical energy and the people within the house.
Yeah, it's a long rod that they drive into the.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
there's a whole technology called earthing, and I know some of the people that did the research on that.
And that's part of it. I mean, these people were feeling just awful up there in Alaska, and the guy was laying on the ground, just getting the vibration. That's why you need to at least take off your shoes about 5 minutes a day and just walk on the earth, just to get that. Well, I'm in the ground all day long.
I know. We all should,
Mama.
So what?
Do you take your shoes off?
No, but I'm connected with the earth. Like my knees are in it, you know. I'm in the sandbox.
So, you know what? In this metaphorical, I'm trying to get the right conjugation of this. It's like the human species that has fallen out of synergistic partnership with the earth's energies is almost like the default node network turned off.
Yep. Then you become narcissistic, consumeristic Republicans. How do they like that one?
That is very rich information for a novel and stuff. Oh, well, so many ideas.
But I like playing in the sandbox with you.
So now, this is what the brain EEG is doing in general terms. It's switching back and forth between lounging around and just being idle and then engaging in a task. So when it engages in a task, there's this mechanism called phase lock. Okay?
It's like shared phase space?
Well, where the waveforms of the oscillations, they lock in phase. They become synchronized.
They reinforce and lock in.
They reinforce each other.
Mm.
So, when you look at an EEG, all those little squiggles, which are voltage fluctuations in time, they're alternating between phase lock, phase reset. Lock, reset. Lock, reset.
Why?
That's just how it operates. So your brain is going from resting to task, resting to task, to conserve energy, right? It's biologically, you know, the most adaptive kind of design.
Nature would burn out the species if she just left them to be on.
If it was on all the time.
All the time, you'd burn it out.
So it's always on, off, on, off, on, off, right? And so the MRI, the fMRI, and the EEG now have married, and you can see these two things occurring. This default mode network, switches on, switches off. The task network switches on, switches off. See it as Christmas light pulsations through these highway systems of the brain, which I showed you the picture of.
Is there a network they've identified which is open to empathy and to you know reception and receiving and this more planetary, ecological, nature-based sort of, you know, is it Is there a network that we could start to tweak, you know, to save these Republicans who are living in malls eating cheese balls?
And said on an ayahuasca trip.
Well, this is what I'm wondering. These parts of the brain. Well, it's the war on consciousness, isn't it?
What I read these last 2 days, because I've been looking at some of these videos, is that they say that when the default mode network shuts down, the brain is now disconnected from its major hubs that allow it to be processing sensory, motor, cognitive,
ego-based
information. So it goes wandering on its own.
Where does it wander?
Where? And that is the psychedelic space.
Not in the task-orientated survival mechanism of the planetary biosphere.
And so that is the psychedelic space.
It's wandering.
Functioning. It's wandering.
To wander.
And it's bringing up memories, and it's reshaping them, and it's inventing all this amazing stuff.
But is it inventing or remembering?
Both.
But you can pinpoint a bit of the brain where it's thinking and recalling, or it's imaginating and carving out.
Both of those things.
It's doing both of those things.
Yeah, the imagination piece is probably really important, because...
What do you think about imagination? Because I've been asked this about in the ancient idea of what imagination was. It was more than what this denuded sense of Western Cartesian sort of imagination, you know. It's almost as if it's the navigator for carving out probability fields and anchoring them into the reality. It's how you dream. First you dream it, then you make it.
Yes.
And so this idea of task-orientated consciousness is only half of the equation, because you need the other half that can imagine the best scenario, and then you need to set about making it real.
Yes.
It's a magical act.
It's a magical act.
Can I take that? Are you ready for the apples?
That is probably the most profound thing out of this whole conversation, the imagination, because that is what the brain is good at, but you have to feed that. You have to... You know, give it free rein to do that.
I've got another little wrinkle here.
Go ahead.
Because that's the only way that anything ever gets made, invented, done, right?
So what if, right, when the default node network kicks in and the consciousness starts to free range into the larger, you know, inner space galactic ecosystem of consciousness, it's not just imagining, it's resonating and finding the other frequencies of consciousness which ambiently exist in the Gaian matrix and in the larger galactic matrix of consciousness itself. So we're not, you know, we're not just...
going outside.
We're not just idly imagining. As we float or navigate through the freedom of hyperdimensional consciousness, where we're integrating and we're glancing across frequencies of larger intelligent consciousness that we're embedded in. And so when we think we're getting ideas, we're just hitting that rich vein where the gold is.
Yee-haw.
Yeah.
I love it.
I like that. It's time for dessert. Look at this. Thank you, Sharon.
I love that.
Yeah.
Do we have ice cream? Cream
like that? Wow.
No.
Wow.
No, Andy probably ate that. You finished it.
Uh-huh.
I was...
Dopamine fiend.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, this is the problem. It's because we're slaves to our own desires. It's the whole Buddhist thing again, attachment, and it feels good.
I tell you, sugar, man.
Yeah.
Oh, my little girl.
She bounces Jekyll off the walls, huh?
She is
addicted, and then and then it goes down to your.
She's bouncing off the walls.
Biological.
She's manic. I mean,
yeah, but you know, wait. It goes down to all your little microbes in your body and all the
microbiotome, you know about that?
Yeah.
Well, there's a mesh network of other species that exist within us which make us up, where we're a gestalt.
There's
trillions of
microorganisms. Yeah.
And they affect the brain too.
Do they?
Oh yeah, this is where the whole nutritional thing comes in.
Yes,
so
thank
are
you.
Are we driven by our microbes? Most of the time we are. If we've got yeast and stuff like that, they want sugar.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And yeast and sugars eventually cause cancer. One of the things. Well, cancers feed off sugar.
Yeah, and then, you do a whole cleanse and you do die off. You're flat out. I know I did that.
So what happens with those microbes? So what's the evolutionary advantage of those microbes taking a hitchhiker now bioenergetic system?
Work in symbiotic relationship with our body.
But I mean, what are we gaining from it? They want sugar, so we like sugar, but they make us like sugar.
It's a matter of balance.
It's like being possessed by an entity. It's like they're wanting something, and we think we're wanting it, but they want it.
That's why we eat things that we eat, especially the sugar things.
So we're all possessed, essentially.
But if you want to get unpossessed, then you do the whole food thing that you don't eat these sugars and.
Well, see, this brings us all back to the Amazon. This brings us back to the shamans and the curanderos and the dieta process of cleansing the body to cleanse the mind and the spirit to be sensitive enough to hear nature.
The one lady that was talking at the CSI, CIS, that's what they were talking
And you know when they say you're hearing nature, it's not just you're picking up the frequency that nature's always broadcasting, but you can hear the signal again because the default node network is off and the signal which is always there can be received by the consciousness of the brain, which is back to its default setting before the egoic stuff's kicked in.
Very good.
Interesting.
Very good.
So tell me, just to round this off as we go through to the dessert menu, what are the technologies that people out there might be able to use to start experimenting themselves? I don't mean like the shamanic, I mean the technological MRI brainwave equipment.
Our friend, Paul, who couldn't make it, you can now go to Amazon or eBay or anywhere and shop. You can buy the Shakti MagnetoStim kit.
Magnetos
for $300 or $400.
Is that the helmet?
Coils, based on Michael Persinger's groundbreaking research.
I've done one of those. Yeah,
the God helmet, you know that.
They feel good. It's like
you
I've done a Persinger helmet. Yeah.
What did you do with the
Julian Palmer? Put it on me once in yes, and I survived. but it was like actually this was a weird thing.
Some of his changa is awfully
good. So we're the Persinger helmet's on, but it's hooked up to like Microsoft DOS operating system. I'm like, Microsoft crashes all the time. What if this Microsoft operating DOS system through the Persinger helmet crashes my brain? I was really, really worried at the time.
So you had anxiety.
But it feels quite nice as a magnetic sort of stimulation of different areas of the brain.
God, Paul would be rolling.
Where is he?
He's got a friend who's going to be 60 tomorrow, and so he's attending the guy's party. Well, tonight, I don't know if I can get him out of his home. This guy had a God experience when he was a young man.
Is this Persinger?
No. He was a spiritual seeker, and he was in an ashram in India or something. He followed some guru, and then he fell from grace. Mm. And he wanted to reproduce that experience all his life.
Mm.
And now he hasn't done ayahuasca yet.
No. Mm-mm. And now he's 60, and he wants to create a movie. Maybe the guy who's talking. And he has acquired one of these Shakti coil system, which was developed by an engineer named Murphy, who was the guy that designed the God helmet for Michael Persinger.
Right.
So he knows the technical side of it very well. And so he's come over here a couple of times with his Shakti magnets, and we've hooked him up to the EEG. And we've tried several placements and patterns of stimulation and stuff. And so far, this guy, Paul, has not been able to find any combination of placements or frequencies or durations or anything that tickles that God center.
Well, that's because there's no guru here.
Could be, yeah.
You know what I mean? That sympathetic vibrational resonance with the guru and the student, and they're radiating a localized consciousness field, just like the planet's radiating a localized consciousness field.
I saw that when I went to India, and I was invited to this ashram in India with Nithyananda. He's this young guru
You gotta look him up.
Not the tantric mongoose.
No.
Okay.
To study the Kundalini activation effect on the EEG, and I have recordings of that.
Kundalini activation?
When people are having a Kundalini activation.
Yeah.
And they start
bouncing
around and stuff. Their EEG goes into, it looks like a seizure disorder. High voltage.
They're getting high voltage, the electrical current from the Kundalini activation.
The generator from the base of the spine, and it's like there's a capacitor, like a...
The infamous flux capacitor.
Back to the future.
Yeah. And I swear, I saw this, I recorded, and they start...
So you recorded someone under having a Kundalini activation?
Would you like some more wine? Or?
Yeah. Yes, please, I really would.
Yeah. I recorded several subjects having Kundalini activation, and I have it on video.
And so but you can't pinpoint any specific area of the brain because it's flush with so much electromagnetic activity that it's just like a storm. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so this new helmet, so there's the passenger's helmet, there's... You've got the EEG, just a little skull cap there, which is the old sort of, it's what now, quite a few years old, but put the gel on, put the skull cap on.
Yeah.
I saw on Kickstarter about 3-4 months ago.
Emotive, probably.
It might have been Emotive. They raised...
It's a little headset.
It's a little headset. It's so elegant. It looks futuristic.
I'd love to get that.
And they raised $1.5 million almost.
I'd like to test drive one of those.
Yeah, and it because you've got the 19-year-old placements on the old, looks like the old bather's cap, you know, with the little placements there. But this one looked like, you know, Star Trek Next Gen Borg. It was just slimline, nice elegant curves, nothing extraneous. You could wear it and look funky on a dance floor, you know. And so it brings up the question if the level of the gradation of recording can do so while people are actually not having
to be really
still.
That's what I want to see. I want to see how it records, what the raw signal looks like, if it's really good quality.
And wireless, too. It's wireless.
Yeah, wireless.
Which is all the go. So tell me, one thing we talked about at the MAPS conference last year, and I might have got this wrong, but I thought I heard you say that we can now, you know, we can take data sets of people's EEG experiences in different states of consciousness. Mm-hmm. We can archive those data sets. Mm-hmm. If someone else then wears a similar EEG helmet, and then we load those data sets, can they be rolled onto the consciousness of the second person?
That's the big question.
But has anyone done this? I mean, you're on the cutting edge of everyone I know.
If you don't know about this,
well, this is what I mean. Like, I mean.
I have a colleague who 2 years ago said, Juan, let's figure out what ayahuasca is doing in the brain and then simulate it with neurofeedback, and then we can create a electronic ayahuasca.
Mm.
And that's exactly what you're suggesting. And I thought, oh, shit, wow. Yeah, well, yeah, you can do some of that. Now, there's already equipment out there by another colleague of mine named Jonathan Cowan, who's a neurofeedback practitioner and kind of a scientist guy. And he has the Neurecon, which generates signals that stimulate your gamma, which is the high beta frequency.
Gamma is beta.
The upwards of 30 hertz, like 38 hertz to 40 and higher. So gamma is very important. All the frequencies are important, but gamma is the frequency that is associated with compassion and empathy. It's been measured in the Tibetan
meditators. Yeah.
And there's already a body of literature, and it's been replicated in different
ways. And so just an offshoot here, if you resonate at a certain frequency like gamma, what you're broadcasting back into the larger frequencies of consciousness of the planet is something which, if it's on the same resonant level, you're going to phase lock.
Yes, exactly. Or you could be producing a harmonic.
Well, that's what they were doing with the whole, what was it, the meditation or the... when they were doing it across the world.
The Resonance Project. Is that the one? The synchronous sort of experiment across the planet, meditating all at the same time and trying to measure. I don't really understand how they measure any of that. But,
Well,
they've done some stuff like that with transcendental meditation.
Huh.
And then William Tiller, he does that. He measures consciousness.
Intention.
It's measurable.
Yeah. I know some of the people in this field. But the thing with this new Nerika. He's got a new one out. It's called, it's happiness, the happiness EEG state. And he just launched it. But I can take him to these websites. I mean, look, if you give me now $1 million, I will have a state-of-the-art experimental laboratory to. Now.
Well, and I'm starting a Kickstarter campaign for you tomorrow. Listeners, if you donate to this Kickstarter campaign, we'll have the state-of-the-art consciousness bat cave.
Because this is what my friend Paul wants to do. Uh-huh. And that's why he came to see me. He says, I've got this vision of creating, like, this altered consciousness, spiritual enlightenment lab where we can take people and have them undergo, you know, like the God helmet, the Shakti coils, entrainment, and they can have a full-on spiritual experience, you know, with no illegal chemicals involved.
And like we can save their data sets for future posterity.
For future posterity, something.
Yeah.
And when they're set on.
Well, you know, it was.
Well, Paul's got some capital, too, to start it with.
But you know what? There's this other site called iDosa, little I like iPhone Dosa. And it's a very diluted, I think, approximation of this, and it's all the rage with the kids, right? Mm-hmm. On the internet, because they can trade, I don't know if it's actually I think it's music, it's like muzak, but a vibration and embedded within it are harmonic frequencies to elicit states of mind. And then they trade them amongst themselves. So if kids are doing this one, kids are doing this, it's all the rage. Neuroscience is trickling down to the next generation, right? So if we have the integrity of the data sets of these people having these peak experiences with the empathy and the gamma and with the integrity.
Well, that's good instead of being the.
Exactly, exactly. Like,
shoot them up.
Exactly. And then we release the data sets.
Oh, so that's not happening. With these kids.
Well, what the model they're using is the same one we would use, but the integrity of their data, I feel, is probably not as potent as spiritual experiences that we could release into the marketplace.
Neat. Yes. Now, earlier you were talking about something that I thought was related to this nerve, and you gave it a name. Was it this?
Well, I was riffing a little bit on this, yeah.
You were talking about, I think it was this. Mm. You were just giving me a different angle
I shouldn't give it away, but I call it.
It's the net something.
It's the WikiLeaks of higher consciousness.
The WikiLeaks of higher consciousness.
Because, you know, WikiLeaks as an organization was one man who said, fuck it. He could see the wide horizon, the big picture, right? And that the smallest act of intent, you know, ripples out and has the biggest repercussions. Same with Snowden, right? And so it's calling us all to step up and to make a difference where we can, only through being present in our brainwave activity. What a rebellion of consciousness is that?
So this is
how can that be illegal? It can't be illegal. I know, I didn't want to give this one away, but yeah. Yeah, yeah. But the attractive thing on the species level is there is no Republicans, Democrats. That's the bifurcation of the brain hemispheres. It's all us. It's all us.
Us, but
it's just
shut
us.
That down. But they've shut that part of it down.
Power to the people. Wait a minute.
You got to awaken it.
This is the ground.
But the thing is, if it becomes a popular fad with the youth, there's no turning back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because who wants to study 20 years to get his meditative technique on a, you know, monastic sort of lifestyle?
Oh, yeah. 10,000
when you
hours.
Can download on your iPhone Dr. Wan's School of Higher Consciousness Blueprints and you can have samadhi from your iPhone.
Yeah, from your iPhone.
Yeah.
An app, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The God app.
Oh, God.
The God app. I think this dinner party may be coming to a close.
Know.
There's going to be a knock on the door any second now.
You better, yeah, be careful.
Yeah.
Here.
Okay. Yeah. We might have to edit this, listeners. Well, that's where it's going, isn't it? That's where it's going. And the thing is, it's not us doing it. It's the larger consciousness we're embedded in that we're pattern matching, and we're getting to the time where it's like, yeah, okay, I've groomed you, I've nurtured you, you've gone through this teenage rebellion stage called history, and you know, and now
teenager,
he's giving me permission to unleash my imagination.
Woohoo!
And I have a pretty intense imagination, but I keep it kind of all bound up, you know?
Well, and Terence said, you know, our culture is in dire need of the imagination, of the right type of ideas that can help solve the problems we're facing as we're basically, you know, living through the paradigm disintegration.
I keep on telling my daughter that. I says, look, you're... What career
you be, what
is,
you could be doing, right?
Your career should not be surrounded around maybe being like a hairdresser or a fashion consultant or whatever. It
could be follicle nurturer.
There you go. Oh, sorry. anything but that. I said, you have to solve the world's problems here. You're the next generation that's supposed to be doing this.
Oh, God. I've heard an argument by friends who had kids and... they took these awesome tasks on these poor babies.
Yeah, you can't project this, what is a collective responsibility that we all have.
Well, she's got to use her brain. She's, you know, she's tuned into the earth.
But she does, but so do we. We all need to use our brain, and we need it's the intent. We were saying about the intent before, and so intent is the single-minded focus of consciousness.
Yeah.
And so we can do anything with the imagination if we have the focus of consciousness.
Yeah.
And so if we can train these brain states and train ourselves, well, we can't release this to the kids until we've tested it on ourselves. So we need
we need
this Kickstarter campaign to get up and running. We need this $1 million.
Yeah.
I will be your lab rat.
All right.
I'm always a rat.
Yeah.
He's got me hooked up all the time on doing all kinds of stuff.
Is this what we do after dinner when we turn the recording off? We hook up the brainwave activity machine?
The best one was the essential oils.
I've had her brain under lots of conditions.
I love you too. What a beautiful neuro-romantic relationship you have. I've had her brain under many different... What do you say? Neuro-conditions.
Neuro-romantic.
You know, I think the Neuroromantics was a musical genre in the early 80s, wasn't it? Neuroromantics? Or maybe it's the early 21st century.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
And we did the tapping thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that thing that...
Oh, yeah, the tap on the bones, the face.
It needed more subjects. I mean, it didn't...
She's done the synchrotron.
You know, the synchrotron. And then we did the essential oils.
She's done the orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, orgasm joint? Yeah. The skull cap thing?
Yeah.
But it's orgasm in general?
Yeah.
Women having orgasms, you know?
Yeah.
Their alpha just goes through the roof.
It can't be just alpha, is it?
And then
alpha orgasm? Is it just alpha? Or is
well, it's the post-orgasm glow.
Ah.
But during the orgasm, it looks like a seizure. It's the petite
moment.
Ah.
It's like a seizure.
Yeah,
and you know those theta healers?
Yeah.
You've heard of theta healers?
Yeah.
Nada.
Nada?
Nada.
I've known a few...
Unless they're tested with like EEG hippie. That shows that they're in theta and using theta to heal.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nada.
Well, it's placebo effect, probably.
Yeah. I mean, they're very good life coaches.
Mm-hmm.
They're very good at what they do, you know, talk therapy
and
type of thing.
And they sound believable.
Yeah.
So it works on that level.
You know...
Wow.
Starts with a V, ends with an S, but that's about it.
Wow.
But you know, they're very nice people, and they're doing great things because they're, you know, encouraging people to do the right thing out there, whatever.
Yeah, but they don't.
But they don't.
They don't park in a theta state.
No.
Look, this is the theta state. This is an amazing book. And I want to reread it because this is so brilliant. It's called Hypnagogia.
I like a bit of... Is that Latin or
you
Greek?
Like that? It's by a Greek scientist, psychologist. And it's about the theta state.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's the unique state of consciousness. So this is where a lot of the imagination...
Oh, now we're getting
something. Now we're getting there.
So, you know, in broad strokes, could we extend that metaphor to say imagination takes place in theta?
It's enhanced.
Enhanced in theta.
So he has a chapter on Dali and Thomas Edison.
Ah.
Dali had a special chair in his studio where he would go.
Dali did?
Yeah, Salvador Dali, yeah.
Wow.
Where he would go and he would sit there and he would go into this twilight state, and then he would force himself to come out of it and he would go straight to the canvas.
Yeah.
To paint.
So imagine
or
if you
sketch.
Imagine, you know, there's this new visionary artist who used the Wacom tablets and they do electronic digital painting. So imagine if you hook up their brainwave states of
yes.
theta to directly go to the computer to carve out their visions.
Oh.
Android Jones, I hope you're listening.
You know, I got an opportunity to do a brain map of Martina Hoffman.
Yes,
you know,
now you're talking.
Who was married to Robert Venosa.
Yes,
and she was totally open to it. And we were going to give a presentation about this at a consciousness conference and everything. And she just totally messed it all up. And she just shelved it. And then she got pissed off at me because she wanted me to spend hours and hours downloading the EEG and explaining it to her in exchange for one of her paintings. We were going to do a trade, and in the end, I got the painting. It's a copy. Of,
but
anyway,
have you?
She doesn't talk to me now.
Oh well.
And I'm like, Martina.
That's unfortunate.
We were sitting on a fantastic.
So what you're saying is you would love to do experiments
project.
With different countercultural archetypal figures like the creative artists or
visionary,
you know, the visionary artists.
Psychedelic visionary.
What?
Yeah.
Brain map them or just do something else?
What are you just talking about?
Brain mapping them and
yeah.
theta, explore theta states, and also the enhanced theta-ness, if they're working electronically with the
yeah.
way they do art, to almost bypass the ego and the consciousness and just
yeah.
get their brainwave, their imaginational experiences to then output into electronic art data.
Uh-huh.
Because that's entrainment. You know how you do that thing, you can move the bits of the brain, you can move the computer or the cursor or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You could not just move a cursor, theoretically you could move the stylus, the electronic stylus on the screen, and you could be painting with your mind.
Yes.
With the enhanced theater imagination.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, this is gold. This is one of my favorite episodes ever. One.
Well, there's a lot of artists in town. In fact, there's one girl they say that she's better than Martina.
Yeah, there's some good visionary
yeah.
artists here. Young
people.
Well,
very young.
Look.
Like in
what,
her early 20s.
What I saw
at MAPS.
At EGA Australia. And you know, I don't go to
the entheogenic conference
gardens
yeah.
and you know the big boom festival and things like that. But there was a dome there
uh-huh.
that had audiovisual psychedelic. It was the best I have ever experienced.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was in this meadow out in the boondocks in Australia with all these young kids.
He was there.
That's
Aurel
and Puma. He's a VJ called Aurel and Puma, and he's French, Australian.
Oh, man.
Is it a guy or a girl?
It's a guy, and he does basically incorporate Shipibo's
yes,
sort of imagery and
so
medicine
good.
Into the.
And there were some ladies there who were smoking DMT because you could smell it right away, right? And they were just passing this pipe around. And it was unreal.
Wow.
It was unreal, man.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the ultra culture for you. Yeah. Well, I think we might have to bring this episode to a close while we still respectable. Having crossed quite a few Rubicons and boundaries. And thank you, everyone. That was the most magnificent physical feast and feast of ideas. That really was. It was a feast of ideas. And there is so much rich material, you know, embedded within this conversation that we are going to have to release this to the public. selectively edited, of course, to protect the innocent or the Republicans, perhaps. Anyway, it's time to get ready for the after-dinner mince and break out the EEG machine.
On
to the next endeavor. Dr. Juan, thank you so much as always. And Cheryl, thank you.
Yeah.
Mahalo.
Wait, I want to finish.